As elsewhere in Polynesia, traditional Easter Island society was divided into chiefs and commoners. To archaeologists today, the difference is obvious from remains of the different houses of the two groups.
Chiefs and members of the elite lived in houses termed harepaenga, in the shape of a long and slender upside-down canoe, typically around 40 feet long, not more than 10 feet wide, and curved at the ends. Harepaenga were built in the 200-yard broad coastal strip, 6 to 10 of them at each major site, immediately inland of the site's platform bearing the statues.
Houses of commoners were relegated to locations further inland, were smaller, and were associated each with its own chicken house, oven, stone garden circle, and garbage pit. Both oral traditions preserved by the islanders and archaeological surveys suggest that Easter's land surface was divided into 11 or 12 territories, each belonging to one clan or lineage group, and each starting from the seacoast and extending inland, as if Easter were a pie cut into wedges. Each territory had its own chief and its own major ceremonial platform supporting statues. That division into radially sliced territories is typical for Polynesian islands elsewhere in the Pacific. What is unusual in that respect about Easter is that those competing clan territories were also integrated religiously, and to some extent economically and politically, under the leadership of one paramount chief. What might account for Easter's integration? It turns out that different territories were endowed with different valuable resources. The most obvious example is that Tongariki territory contained Ranuraraku Crater, the island's only source of the best stone for carving statues. The red stone cylinders on top of some statues all came from Hanga Pukura territory. Venapu and Hanga Pukura territories control the three major quarries of obsidian, the fine-grained volcanic stone used for making sharp tools. Other resources, such as timber, coral for making files, red ochre, and paper mulberry trees, the source of bark pounded into tapa cloth, were also unevenly distributed. The clearest archaeological evidence for some degree of integration among the competing clan territories is that stone statues and their red cylinders ended up on platforms in all 11 or 12 territories distributed all over the island. Hence, a clan living at a distance from the quarries would have needed permission from several clans to transport statues and cylinders across the latter's territories. At first, that seems only natural to us. We take it for granted that resources from one coast are routinely transported long distances to other coasts. But we forget how complicated it has usually been throughout history for one territory to negotiate access to another territory's resources. We now return to the subject that everyone thinks of first at the mention of Easter Island, its giant stone statues termed Moai, and the stone platforms termed Ahu on which they stood. About 300 Ahu have been identified, of which about 113 did bear Moai, and 25 of them were especially large and elaborate. Each of the island's dozen territories had between 1 and 5 of those large Ahu. The Ahu is a rectangular platform made of rubble fill, held in place by 4 stone retaining walls of gray basalt. The Ahu are up to 13 feet high, and many are extended by lateral wings to a width of up to 500 feet. Hence, an Ahu's total weight, from about 300 tons up to more than 9,000 tons, dwarfs that of the statues that it supports. In back of an Ahu are crematoria containing the remains of thousands of bodies. In that practice of cremation, Easter was unique in Polynesia, where bodies were otherwise just buried. Today, the Ahu are dark gray, but originally, they were a much more colorful white, yellow, and red. The facing slabs were encrusted with white coral, the stone of a freshly cut Moai was yellow, and the Moai's crown was red. As for the Moai, which represent high-ranking ancestors, archaeologist Joanne Van Tilburg has inventoried a total of 887 carved, of which nearly half still remain in Ranuraraku Quarry, while most of those transported out of the quarry were erected on Ahu. The average erected statue was 13 feet tall and weighed about 10 tons. We would, of course, love to know exactly when Easter Islanders erected their first statues and how styles and dimensions changed with time. Unfortunately, because stone cannot be radiocarbon dated, we are forced to rely on indirect dating methods. It seems clear, however, that later statues tended to be taller, though not necessarily heavier, and that the biggest Ahu underwent multiple rebuildings with time to become larger and more elaborate. The increase in statue size with time suggests competition between rival chiefs commissioning the statues to outdo each other. That conclusion also screams from an apparently late feature called Pukau, a cylinder of red scoria weighing up to 12 tons, mounted as a separate piece to rest on top of a Moai's flat head. We don't know for sure what the Pukau represented. Our best guess is a headdress of red bird's feathers prized throughout Polynesia and reserved for chiefs, or else a hat of feathers and tapa cloth. Given the widespread distribution over Polynesia of platforms and statues, why were only Easter Islanders the ones to go overboard? To make by far the largest investment of societal resources in building them, and to erect the biggest ones. At least four different factors cooperated to produce that outcome. First, Ranu Raraku tuff is the best stone in the Pacific for carving. Second, other Pacific Island societies devoted their energy, resources, and labor to inter-island trading, raiding, exploration, colonization, and emigration. But those competing outlets were foreclosed for Easter Islanders by their isolation. Third, Easter's gentle terrain and complementary resources in different territories led to some integration of the island, thereby letting clans all over the island obtain Ranu Raraku stone. Finally, as we shall see, building platforms and statues required feeding lots of people, a feat made possible by the food surpluses produced by elite-controlled upland plantations.